I think about everything God has done for me and how much He loves me, well, I just gotta let it out.
Times, you just gotta say it like it is. And boy, Dr. Joe McElhaney, you did a great job. If he's, Phil, if he's never before taken the mic and just said his own piece, I'm glad he decided to start on our program. That's pretty cool. There's a major conference coming up called Stand Firm, Love True. It's happening April 20th and 21st here at the Embassy Church in Oshawa. And is there a cost involved? I don't see that on here.
Yeah, the cost for adults is $25 or $40 per couple.
Okay.
And $25 for youth. But that's for the entire Friday night, Saturday, and that includes all the training, program materials, everything.
Okay. All righty. Dr. Nadine Nyhus, did I say that right, is going to be joining us here momentarily, and I believe she may even be on the phone, but describe who she is and what the connection is between Peace Ontario and the work that she's doing.
Well, we met Dr. Nadine, it was about, I think, two years ago when the sex ed curriculum first hit, right? We're out and about in churches talking, et cetera, and all of a sudden we get this email from this psychiatrist saying, you're 100% on board, Phil. You're absolutely right. This is, and I was blown away because I got to be honest, even when I talk to my own doctor about this, right, mm-hmm. he thinks, well, I don't want to say something that's too political, you know, but she's just like Dr. Joe, right? And she says, no, these are the facts, Phil. And so Dr. Nadine, she's even been with us on some of our presentations, when we present in churches, right? And she's just done a fantastic job of making people aware of the facts.
Well, let's talk about some of those facts. And she joins us here live on Lifeline, Dr. Nadine Nyhus. Did I say that correctly, by the way? Can you help me with that?
Yeah, you're doing great with that, Neil. Thanks.
All right. Well, thank you. And thanks for being here. Phil gave you a great lead-in. But is he correct that you were absorbing those stats and the information, and you were his biggest cheerleader at that point?
Absolutely.
Well, I was very impressed with what Phil has done because he's been working on this since the 1990s, and people contact him with all kinds of accounts of what's going on, so he really has his finger on the pulse of what's happening in the schools. My take on it is a little bit different than that. My take on it is as a medical doctor and a psychiatrist, what my concerns are about the Ontario curriculum itself. I've spent quite a bit of time going through it, looking in a lot of detail about what it's saying about sexual activity and what it isn't saying. And there's big problems with this Ontario curriculum.
Okay, give us an example. Not only just what it's saying, but also what it isn't saying. Let's hear some of that, too.
Yeah, so basically, this sex ed curriculum states that its purpose is to give students the information they need to make informed decisions about sex. For example, in the overview of grades 7 and 8 on page 182, it states the curriculum has an emphasis on acquiring the knowledge and skills needed to make informed decisions about their sexual health. Now, as a medical doctor, I know what it means to give information so that a patient can make an informed decision, to give informed consent. And that requires knowledge of both the risks and the benefits. Now, the sexual ed curriculum does a good job about talking about the benefits. It talks about the pleasure and the care and the connection that you can get from sex. But it glosses over the risks and in places actually gives very misleading information. Dr. McElhaney talked about one of those areas, and that's the area of chlamydia. You know, it completely glosses over the risk of silent, that means no symptoms, infection with chlamydia that ends up causing infertility. And the research has been done. The majority of these teens are very interested in getting married and having a family. I mean, these teens have a right to know that silent chlamydia infection can make it so they are not able to have a baby and not able to have their own children. If I gave information to patients the way this curriculum does to students for informed decisions, I would be at high risk of losing my license. I can tell you that quite honestly, Neil. This curriculum is very irresponsible.
In an age of lawsuits and litigation, why aren't school districts and educators being held liable for failing to inform students of the information you're describing?
Well, you know, I've often thought that one of the ways that they might get some pushback for this curriculum is, you know, if a teen does end up suing the government for this misinformation, that would be one of the ways of, you know, putting a hold on it. But, you know, these things are very complicated, you know, all the government bureaucracy that's into this. And I mean, I got involved initially because I was very concerned about teen girls. I mean, in my opinion, Neil, it's teen girls that are thrown under the bus with this curriculum. I don't know if you're aware or if your listeners are aware that that actually it's teen girls that are having anal intercourse and girls in their early 20s. There was a study done in 2010 that's published in the Journal of Sex Medicine. 40% of girls aged 20 to 24 have had anal intercourse at least once. I mean, that is a way different kind of statistics than you would find amongst males. Now, this significant, I think, cause of this is the pressure that these girls are getting from guys who are looking at porn, because this is a very predominant theme in porn, anal intercourse. But, I mean, who are the people who are really at risk of this, of anal intercourse, which has, you know, a 20 times or higher rate of infection of HIV and sexually transmitted infections and other types of intercourse? And I have to point out that this curriculum equates vaginal and anal intercourse as equally risky. Whenever it mentions them in vaginal and anal intercourse as though they're equally risky. And in fact, at the time this curriculum came out, Toronto Planned Parenthood had a website up called Anal Play 101, which actually stated that anal intercourse is a great way to avoid pregnancy. I noticed that they've recently taken that out, but that was up on their website for years, advocating anal intercourse as a way to avoid pregnancy. I mean, that's pretty shocking, really. And the rate of girls and young women who have experienced anal intercourse, those are the people who are having anal intercourse. It's not men that are having anal intercourse. It's women. And this is why I'm saying this sex ed curriculum that equates vaginal and anal intercourse and doesn't discuss the real risk of sexually transmitted infections, you know, they are throwing teen girls under the bus by not giving them correct information.
Wow. Can you hang on a bit? We're going to take a break. I'd love to continue with you after the break if you're okay to stick around for just a bit.
Okay.
All right, we will continue with Dr. Nadine Nyhus. She's a psychiatrist and an addiction specialist. Obviously, has a lot to add to the conversation based upon her professional expertise and some pretty eye-opening stuff. Question remains, what are we going to do about it and what can we do about it? Well, that's why we're discussing this today, because parents and churches have options, and we'll tell you about more of that when Lifeline continues.
Hey kids, once upon a time there was this guy, or maybe it was a gal, I can't remember. And every single day they listened to Lifeline, day after day, year after year. But they never picked up the phone, and they never called. And Neil never knew they existed. And Neil was sad. The end.
And that right there actually is a true story. So that's how it is if you don't listen. But listen, you have friends and others that maybe need to be a part of this conversation, so call them and have them tune in. We're also going to put this entire conversation in our audio vault. It's under media online at WDCXradio.com. And starting tomorrow, it'll be available for others to tune in and listen back. We may be able to play segments or portions of this conversation in the days ahead as well, just to be an additional assist. But let's get right back to the phones here. And Dr. Nadine Nyhus, who's a psychiatrist and addictions specialist in the schools here in Southern Ontario and working with, working with people in Southern Ontario. Do you do work directly with the schools, Nadine?
No, I don't, Neil. Actually, okay. I do work with a lot of people who consider themselves to have porn addictions, and my specialty is actually trauma, not so much addiction. So I'm a general psychiatrist, and I work in general psychiatry, but with an emphasis in trauma, and I deal with a lot of abuse and porn addiction.
Well, you obviously jumped at the chance to be a part of what Phil is doing through Peace Ontario and some of these groups that are getting together to try to address the problem. Can you talk about any of the any of that from your perspective? Because obviously you're an advocate for getting parents and churches involved in this process.
Yeah, I think it can be very intimidating to be talking to one's kids about sex, but I think Phil has some great information on board, and I think the idea that parents are so influential hopefully will be very motivating to parents. I think also that churches really need to reevaluate how much they talk about sex. You know, it's kind of like our culture is sex obsessed, and in my practice, I mean, I see the prevalence of sexual related issues that come up in the course of people trying to get healthy psychologically. And I think it's really critical in churches that there's regular teaching on what healthy sex is. In our culture, sex is seen as an issue of power. And this is not what the scriptures talk about sex. The scriptures speak about a sex that really is related to intimacy. You know, it's not wielding power over somebody, whether you're male or female. I mean, both genders can wield power over the other in regard to sex. It's to be an outworking of a connection and a lifelong commitment to another person. That kind of framework and boundary around sexuality is the thing that makes it safe and intimate and a very deep and rich experience. This is one of the reasons that the surveys consistently show that people who have a solid Christian faith and have the most fulfilling sex life.
You know, you said earlier that churches need to reevaluate how much they talk about sex, and then you kind of clarified later. I think what you meant to say is talk about, you know, clarify, investigate how much they don't talk about sex is the point. And I think part of the reason is there's a sense of shame for some reason that goes along with that, which is really sad because I've heard people say, look at sex is something God created. It's something to be enjoyed within the context of the marriage. And yet I'm overstating this, but it seems like nothing said about it up until the point of marriage. And then even afterwards, there's a woman here in Southern Ontario. Her name is Sheila Ray Gregoire. Actually lives probably just down the road a bit here. Talks a lot about, you know, intimacy in marriage and relations between husbands and wives, physical relations. And, you know, I heard her speak in a church here in Toronto, and I love her, by the way. I think she does an incredible job with that. But I heard her speak, and I heard her use four words that I never heard before in a church. And I'm 57 years old. I've been in church my entire life. And she said four words that I'd heard many times in locker rooms and in neighborhoods and, you know, on cable television, but I never heard them said before in a church. And of course, she was doing it from a godly perspective. You know, the big O. I mean, she was talking about, I blushed talking about this, you know, but words like masturbation. Okay, wait a second. What are parents talking to their kids about with regard to that issue? Are they addressing it, or are we shying away? Because you can guarantee they're talking about it on the school bus, and they're talking about it in classrooms in the sex ed curriculum. So we better wake up, I guess, is the bottom line. And Phil, I want to give you an opportunity here to finish this out with Dr. Nadine, but she's been a great friend to you in this process, and she's on to something here. You know, that what she's identified is exactly what we need to be paying attention to.
Absolutely right. Neil, I think that's exactly true, that, you know, this is something that does need to be addressed more. And the sex ed curriculum itself, I mean, I think people need to be aware of what is and isn't in the sex ed curriculum. You might be shocked to hear that the word pornography and the concept of pornography is not mentioned in the entire Ontario ed curriculum.
So wait, are we to assume then that they just think that's just a normal part of life? That isn't even really involved in this conversation.
Who knows what they think? But
when
I mean,
it comes to,
hang on, Nadine, just a second. Phil's trying to interject something here, if you don't mind. For some reason, she can't really hear us very well. Go ahead.
When it comes to sexual risk reduction or comprehensive sex ed, what they are trying to do is affirm to kids alternative ways to express your sexuality, right? And pornography and masturbation, etc., are tools that you can use to express yourself sexually in, and they would say, a safer way. But then they don't talk about the problems when it comes to masturbation and excessive masturbation and addictions, etc. Okay.
As a female, I take great exception to that concept of considering pornography a reducing risk behavior, because pornography is actually associated with increased sexual aggression and sexual offenses.
Right.
It's associated with an increased acceptance of rape, the rape myth, which is the myth that females like or cause rape. It's associated with a decrease in condom use and an increased number of sexual partners. And we need to be aware that pornography in 2018 is very different than it was 20 or even 10 years ago. It's more aggressive and degrading to women. In fact, there's an association, you know, between high pornography use and all kinds of marital problems. So to not address the problem that pornography is a huge issue. I mean, this idea of how do you have a health, as a psychiatrist, this is one of the main things that I deal with in my practice. How do you have a healthy, intimate connection with another human being? Like, surely if they're going to be talking about something as intimate as sexual intercourse, they can mention the risks of pornography. I think this is completely irresponsible of the Ontario government to publish a sex ed curriculum that doesn't mention that.
All right. Well, we're out of time with Dr. Nadine. Any final thought you want to share about her work?
I just appreciate so much, Dr. Nadine, you coming out and just being straight with us.
Thank you so much. God
problem.
Bless you.
Thanks very much for having me on, Neil and Phil.
Thank
appreciate
you.
It. All right, when we come back, we're going to have the opportunity to meet Pastor Leon Vanderveerden. He's the executive pastor here at Embassy Church. He's got a unique perspective on all this. And then shortly after, Dr. Frieda Busch will join us. She's involved with what's called the Building Family Connections Program. There's a lot more to come as we continue our conversation. If you want more details, go to peaceontario.com, medinstitute.org, or heritageservices.org.
So take me as you find me. Lifeline. Listener or participant, it's up to you. 1-800-684-2848 or 883-5000.
Okay, recapping very quickly where we've been in today's conversation. Earlier, Dr. Joe McElhaney was with us. He's founder of the Medical Institute for Sexual Health. Recently here, just a moment ago, Dr. Nadine Nyhus was with us. She's a psychiatrist and addiction specialist working here in the GTA. Both of them have done a great deal of research on the issue of STDs and transmission rates and what's actually healthy for kids. Both incredibly concerned that some of these things are either not being discussed or glossed over in sex ed curriculums, essentially putting all of America and Canada's youth at great risk, right, Phil? So, I mean, these are huge issues in that sense. And someday school systems may even be held liable for what they're not telling kids about the risks that kids are being involved in. And then to, like, overlook pornography as though that's not a part of the equation is just irresponsible on the part of school districts. So we know that there's problems in the schools. Then it comes back to, well, what can parents and churches do about it? And that's where you come in.
Yes.
And we'll talk about, you know, we'll have other guests joining us, but very briefly, if somebody just tuned in, they got out of work at 4, and they're like, okay, they're talking about sex ed, but what? Where's this going? You've got a conference coming up. There's curriculum material available.
Right.
There's a lot of stuff happening in both the U.S. and Canada that's very positive on this front. So describe that briefly.
Yeah, Neil, in the last 20 years, basically what we've done is we've helped parents when it comes to dialoguing with the school on the sensitive issue of human sexuality.
Right.
And we have a five-step process. I won't go through that process. You can access it online. And in our seminars, we take parents through that five-step process on how you can, one, understand really what's in the curriculum. So you're speaking accurately, not emotionally, right? How to build relationship with your child's teacher so that when it comes time to talk about the difficult issues, you can do that and do it successfully.
So what do you say to the parent who says, okay, I got an idea. I'm really upset about what I'm finding out is being taught to kids in the schools. So I'm going to create a sign that says, teach math, not masturbation. And I'm going to go stand outside the office and picket. And hopefully that'll help. What do you think?
Well, what we found is, Neil, that doesn't help. But what we have done is we've gone to Scripture, and in Luke 10, when Christ sent out the 72, what did he say? He said, bless, fellowship, build relationship, and then when you've gained credibility, then you can talk. And that's what we train our parents to do. And Neil, what we found from parents is parents who follow those steps tell us that they haven't had a teacher tell them, no, your child must stay in class.
Okay, so you're about empowering youth, equipping parents,
yes,
involving the church in the process, building relationships with schools.
Absolutely.
And this is working?
It's working. I mean, last week I had a discussion with Superintendent of Education, and the Superintendent of Education had said, "Gee, Phil, do you think you might be able to bring your programs into our parents?"
No kidding. Amen. All right, so we're making progress. Describe who we're about to meet here. Pastor Leon Vanderveerden, executive pastor of Embassy Church. But how do you know him?
Well, Embassy has asked me to work with the churches in Durham, and so I met Pastor Leon, and Pastor Leon came to Canada 2 years ago from the Netherlands, and supposed to be the most sexually free country in the world. And he had some really remarkable things to say about his kids' experience in school.
Okay. Leon, if you don't mind, scoot up to that microphone, and thank you for being here. You were shocked when you got to Canada that there was stuff happening here that was beyond what was going on in the Netherlands?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Both as a parent and a pastor, we've got four kids. So we've been, aware of talking to kids about sex and all that. We've been doing that. So going here to Canada, we had to sign a little form if you consent to your kid getting sex ed. And we signed it. It was just a one sheet of paper. We didn't know what it was. And we assumed, it would be similar as how we've experienced it in the Netherlands. But then when one of our kids came home, actually confused and telling us some of the things that they were told, and actually even meeting Phil a couple of months ago at a conference, he told me even a little more then about it all. And we were like, is that what they're being taught? It might be wise that we talk to our kids a little bit more than we did.
In appropriate terms, can you describe what it was?
Some of the things, especially, we were shocked at what kids at certain ages are already being taught. Like, my wife has a psychological background. She knows even about the development of a kid's brain. Mm-hmm. So even though we are early with our kids telling them about sex and how it works and all of that stuff, we are also aware of what a kid can handle at a certain age. So we assume that when our kid of 7 and our other kid of 12, when they would hear about this, they wouldn't hear so many details. Whereas through Phil, we discovered, they're being taught this and this and this and this. Mm-hmm. Even little things of going around the table and having to say, "Hey, my name is," and then they fill in their name and then say, "I'm a he," or "I'm a she," or "I don't know what I am." Those kind of things at that age that kids were confronted with those kinds of statements kind of shocked us.
The whole gender fluidity, in our schools right now, starting in primary grades, we're telling our kids, you are not a boy or a girl. You get to choose whether you're a boy or a girl, okay? And what's happened is it's led to 1,000% increase in the number of kids that are being treated for gender dysphoria. And the experts are saying it's actually leading to more confusion and mental and emotional stress in our kids.
Yep, exactly.
Am I right that did I hear at some point in one of the conversations prior to us going on the air that somewhere there's a school district where teachers have been instructed to kind of pay attention to opposition they're getting from parents so that parents can essentially be put on a list? And I don't know what the Canadian equivalent of Child Protection Services is, but the authorities would be alerted at some point if parents were deemed to be opposing that type of education that you're describing.
Those discussions are happening in schools, okay? I'm not saying it's actually taken place, okay? But those discussions are happening, and actually we've even had parents come to us and say, the teacher friend down the street has told me that if I express concern about gender fluidity instruction, that I could have Child Protection Services, Children's Aid here in Canada, come to my home. And they're really concerned about it. And I think, Neil, it's partly because we're not involved with the schools. Mm-hmm. The church hasn't been involved with the schools.
Yeah.
So, wow. Go ahead.
Yeah, one of the things that I really liked about Phil's approach, even what he just shared about Luke 10, is like so often we Christians can constantly state what we are against, but we can also journey together, even with the teacher, mm-hmm. and show what we are for. Even that has been in our experience, even though at first we thought, man, we are confronted with all kinds of issues and what are our kids being taught. But also even through learning more of what is being taught through Phil's teachings and then connecting with the school, we actually did it. Even recently talking to the teacher, and we discovered that if you approach with honor and openness, but at the same time you don't, you show love, but you don't compromise your values, mm-hmm. then actually there is room for conversation. The teacher that was teaching our kids some things that we were really concerned about, is also really open to hear alternatives. She's open to the curriculum. And we actually just recently had a very good conversation.
I would never discourage anyone from reading God's Word or using it in the course of conversation. But one of the things I'm picking up about all this is that parents who have a legitimate concern about what's being taught in the schools, if they take the approach you're describing, they're coming at it respectfully, openly, but with some solid science and
That's
medical
right.
information, armed with science and medical information, yep. which we heard about from Dr. McElhaney and Dr. Nyhus, that a lot of teachers and administrators are willing to listen.
Oh, yeah.
That's the point.
For sure. Like one of the things, like even my kid's teacher, by making her feel that we know that she loves our kids, mm-hmm. like you would be a teacher because you love kids.
Right.
So if they would feel that they are being honored in that, then you don't have to throw scripture at them and tell them you're immoral, this. But if you have reasonable arguments that you come with and you show them, hey, we're talking on the same level that we love and we want the best for our kids, they are open.
Did you bring the teacher a Tim Hortons double-double?
I didn't.
And it's still...
I probably should have done it, but even without a double-double, it was a real good conversation.
And at least a 10-pack of Timbits, because that's going to go a long way, I'm telling you.
Oh, it's true. I do it when I buy a car, but not for...
That's fabulous. So, but the point here is, I mean, your church is on board, and of course, we're going to get a chance to meet Pastor Doug a little bit later. The church here is supportive, but... You're really looking at this more as a parent. Your kids are involved in this, right?
Yes, and that's what I find interesting, and actually I even see God in it, because I see both my heart as a parent and as a pastor, like the approach of what my wife and I always felt for our kids is we feel that we want to be the first to talk to our kids about sex, because the person they hear it first from, they will feel the emotions and all of that stuff, and that will make a big difference. What we found with one of our kids, because of even us moving and all that, we discovered, hey, we weren't the first, and we actually saw how that made a difference. That little triangle that Phil talks about, that church, parents, and schools need to be, like, are the three major influences. Mm-hmm. I totally agree. I know of lots of parents who are afraid to talk to their kids about sex. They don't even right. dare to mention some of the four words that you were just talking about. And church is the same. Pastors are ashamed. They don't know how. They're afraid of all the consequences, sometimes even finding out the wisdom of how to deal with it in a way that it is still safe right. and all of that stuff. So the need in my mind as a pastor and as a parent for us to get better at this, and not only what we're against, but majorly even what we're for,
Amen.
Is crucial.
It's huge. Leon, thank you for stopping in.
You're
more than
welcome. Contribution
is phenomenal. When we come back, we're going to hear from Dr. Frieda Busch. That was Leon Van Vierden. He's the executive pastor here at the Embassy Church in Oshawa, where there's going to be a major conference for all churches and all believers and anyone who's
That's
interested.
Right. Yeah.
Educators also welcome. Anybody's welcome.
Absolutely.
Stand Firm, Love True is the name of the conference. It's happening Friday, April 20th, Saturday the 21st. Love, Sex, and Integrity Conference right here at the church. Empowering youth, equipping parents and adults. PeaceOntario.com is where you can get more details on that. PeaceOntario.com, spelled P-E-A-C-E. Just before the break, I want to get a question in here from Manoj. You've got a healthy relationship question, which we'll deal with after the break. But thank you for joining us. What's your question?
Just my question is that as a new Christian, you know, a lot of times when we learn a lot about our relationship with God and learning about the Bible, but I just want to know about when finding your ideal partner in your life or having a safe relationship, how do you make your relationship, like what are the criteria of having a Christian relationship?
You mean a Christian marriage relationship?
No, just like dating in general. Like just okay. for like high school students and university, you know.
Okay. All right. Healthy relationship question. All right. Well, we'll get to that in just a moment. Thank you for asking it. When we come back, Dr. Frieda Busch will join us and we'll respond to Manoj's question as well.
From Victor, New York to Muskoka, Ontario, Lifeline.
Wow, what a conversation today, and more to come. So we've identified, Phil, a lot about the problem. Not everything, but a lot of information here about the problem that exists. And there's a lot of problems. What kids are being taught in some cases is flat out wrong, or it's leaving out information that's important and vital for kids' health. You got parents who feel ill-equipped or sometimes afraid to even address the issue. Churches that haven't been as involved as they could be, often aren't even talking about sex at all. And pretty much parents and churches are saying, we recognize our responsibility to be involved and to be a voice, but we don't know where to start. And so you've got people like Leon and so many others who have kids in the schools that are saying, give us some help, help equip us, get us ready. We want to take responsibility and we want to work with the schools. We don't want to have an adversarial relationship. We want it to be good. But that's what your resources and your curriculum and your teaching, all of this is designed to answer that, right?
Absolutely. That's exactly. And this conference that you've been mentioning, you know, here in Durham, it's the beginning of a long-term plan, okay, to empower parents and the church to provide a sexual risk avoidance message. And that's the public health term that's used to the approach that we take.
All right, and just before we get to Dr. Freda Bush and our apology that she's been holding for so long, but the healthy relationship question, and I believe we're talking about this from a sexual perspective, how do you lay the groundwork for a healthy relationship when you're looking to get married and start off on the right foot?
Well, actually, you know, and there are a lot of people, and we talked about this on the break, that, you know, would say that oral sex, anal sex, et cetera, isn't really sex. But here's the reality. The reality is our sexually transmitted infection rates are going through the roof because this is an alternative. This is presented as an alternative way of expressing ourselves sexually to a partner. And if you go on the Center for Disease Control, if you go on even on the Canadian websites and medical websites, and you find what is the best way to avoid these, they always say, wait until you find the one partner you're going to spend the rest of your life with. Now, this person that the caller came in said, hey, I've got a girlfriend. You know what? Well, you know what? She may not be your girlfriend in 6 months or a year from now.
Right.
And when it comes to oral sex, for example, if you have six or more oral sex partners, the research shows us that you have an 8.6 times greater chance of getting throat cancer.
That's incredible. All right, and real quick, well, let's hold off on it for a minute. Let's get Freda Bush into the conversation.
Yeah.
And Freda, thank you for holding. I wanted to get you earlier, but Phil wouldn't let me. And, you know, I feel bad about that. Are you with us, Freda? Can you hear me?
I am with you. I can hear you, and I've enjoyed the conversation. Thank you.
Wow. Well, thanks for being so patient. We're going to meet Christina Tay in just a moment. Her life was dramatically affected by not getting better information earlier in her life. But you're an advocate for getting good information into the hands of parents and students, and you're a part of something called the Building Family Connections Program. So describe all this from your perspective. What would you add to our conversation today?
Well, what I would add is that we try to equip and empower parents with good information so that they become the primary teacher of their young people. And the Building Family Connections Program is sponsored by the Medical Institute for Sexual Health. Actually, we developed this curriculum with funding from a grant by the Center for Disease Control, and they are the go-to person as far as information goes on diseases. And we use that credible information to arm and equip parents so that they not only are the primary teacher of their children about sex, but they also have medically accurate scientific information when they give it. Of course, we put it in a language that they can understand and that the young people will understand, but they are equipped when they go through this program.
Okay, so you mentioned the word credible, because somebody might say, well, wait a minute, here we go again. This information really sounds like it supports what Christians or conservatives say about this issue. So who's really going to pay attention? Who's going to listen? But I was told that the Mississippi Department of Social Services and others are using this stuff. Is that correct?
Well, I will tell you, part of it has to do with your worldview, but I'm saying that the Center for Disease Control uses medically accurate scientific information, and they're the ones that do the youth risk behavior surveys for the high schools, and they keep these numbers, and every 2 to 3 years they publish those numbers so that we can compare changes from one period of time to the other. So the Center for Disease Control actually says that that the best way to prevent sexually transmitted diseases is to either abstain from sexual activity or limit your partnerships to one who limits themselves to one.
That's right.
So, but is the average sex educator, somebody teaching sex ed in a high school, saying what she just said? Would that teacher stand up and say, you know, kids, the Center for Disease Control says that abstaining or limiting partners is the way to go?
It's not in our curriculum, Neil.
Okay, so they're not saying it. So why are they avoiding saying what you just said, Dr. Bush?
I don't know why they are doing it other than it's perhaps not politically correct.
Oh.
But
okay.
information...
I see.
That information is there, and it's supported by the CDC.
Yeah, it could. Failing to share that kind of information could kill a child or seriously harm them. But if it's not politically correct, we won't bring it up.
Well, I think what happens is if the young person doesn't get it in the school, they must get it at home. They must get it in the church. These are credible sources of information in our communities. Yeah. So that would be my go-to, would be my parents. And that's one of the reasons we have the Building Family Connections curriculum, which is a 10-module interactive sexual health curriculum that arms the parents so that they can be the primary teacher of their young people. If anything goes wrong, let's say the young person gets pregnant, they're going to go to the parents. The school is going to expect, although I know some school systems can take the young people to get abortions or to get treatment for STDs or get IUDs and pass out condoms without parents even knowing it. But parents need to have that established relationship with their young people so that the young people will look to them as a credible source. I mean, that's what parents are for. You'll be there to pick up the pieces if something tragic happens. So why not be there in the beginning and start them with the knowledge and the skills that they should have so the young people would be able to say to someone, oh, that's not correct. You
right,
can't
so
tell me that. My
the
mama
building
didn't
family,
say it. My daddy didn't say it.
The Building Family Connections program, Phil,
that's
you say this is important information. Are you utilizing it in your own curriculum?
Yeah, we're certified in Building Family Connections. We've had people trained in it. And at this conference, mm-hmm. parents that come, or any parenting adult, anybody that has input in the life of a child, they'll go through the 10-module program right there at our conference on April 2021.
And this information is equally valuable no matter which side of the border you live on?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. Dr. Frieda, I wish we had more time. We will be inviting you back. Thank you for your patience. Thank you for holding and for adding so much to the conversation today. God bless you. All right. We will be back in just a moment, and we're going to meet Christina Tay. She's involved with an organization called Heritage Keepers and a curriculum called Heritage Keepers. She's got a lot to say about this issue from her own experience, and I invite you to stick around. There's more to come on this edition of Lifeline.